If you've ever put your hands at the base of your back, leaned into them and those hands and then winced a little bit, you know how uncomfortable lower back pain can make you. But getting treatment from a physical therapist early could help you recover faster than just waiting to see if the pain subsides. And as always, we're lucky to have a couple of top-notch physical therapists with us. Lori Dine Brody, physical therapist, athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. And Lori, always a pleasure.
It is great to be here on such a gorgeous day.
Yes, and Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well.
Good.
You guys look healthy and fit.
Thanks. And Jill's all in her badger red today. Yeah. Her watch even matches her badger stuff.
That's great. No lower back pain for either of you?
No,
not
today, but my 16-year-old's complaining of some. But he's a pretty intense soccer player, so on any given day, he'll hurt somewhere.
Well, and the average person, I mean, the average population, about 80% of people at some point in their lifetime will experience an episode of low back pain. So if you've never experienced low back pain, you're actually in the minority.
Yeah, you're way in the minority. Yeah. Let me give the number for people to call in. If you have a question, maybe you've had lower back pain and want to know how to deal with it, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page site, and the title of that is The Larry Mueller Show. Certainly, if you have other physical therapy issues, I hope you'll join in as well. Again, the number 1-800-642-1234. So the most common reasons for lower back pain, is it being overweight? Is it too much lifting? Is it
all of the above? There is no one common factor that you can point to, although there are the obvious. If you have a large protruding abdomen, then that really puts a lot of strain on your low back. Your low back has to work much harder because you have this long lever that it's trying to maintain. And obviously in pregnant women, we see the same thing. So that combined with the hormonal changes that produce ligament laxity causes some back pain. But, you know, for the most part, when we see people, it's that they've done something. Painting their walls, they were trimming trees, they were gardening, they spent too long at a bent over position. It's a combination of some physical factors, you know, their maybe lack of exercise combined with some activity that tips the scales.
And there's a sort of a tendency, I think, if you get something like that, it's just all kind of, all right, I'll just, hopefully it'll go away.
Right. I mean, some people anecdotally call it low back pain the common cold of the back, because at some point, you're all going to get one, and for the most part, it goes away.
Mm-hmm.
Like Lori said, it's usually due to some sort of exertion, or usually you can tie your symptoms to something you did. I sat too long in the car, did a lot of gardening, did a lot of raking. That was something that was unusual for my body, and now I'm a little sore, and it's usually muscle soreness, and typically it goes away within a few days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if it doesn't, then we need some intervention. Or if you're seeing a pattern where, you know, every few weeks, you know, you wake up in the morning and your back hurts and it hurts for 2 or 3 days. Those are the prodromal signs that we see when people come in with acute back pain, sometimes with sciatic pain down their leg. They'll say, well, actually, for the last 2 or 3 months, you know, I've been waking up with just this dull ache in my back and I've ignored it. So, you know, if you come in early when you've got that dull ache, sometimes in one visit we can take a look at you, see if we can reproduce your symptoms, see if we can find an underlying cause and intervene at that point before you have a big sciatic episode.
And there's a lot of research out there showing that the sooner you get into physical therapy, the quicker you get better, and the less healthcare dollars are spent on treating low back pain.
Mm-hmm. Medications, physical therapy visits, doctor's visits, imaging, all that.
Loss of work time.
For me, it's usually the first May, really early in May, or maybe the end of April, when I have some lower back pain, but that's just because I'm starting up golf again, and I haven't done it for a while, and so...
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, sore lower back for a week or two, and then it's gone. Mm-hmm. As long as I keep going.
Have you not remembered any of the things that we've taught you about how to get back to activity, Larry? Where have you been for the last 15 years?
Well, I'm better than I used to be.
That's right. Exactly. So.
Oh, gosh. Well, I tell you what, there's lots we can talk about. Let me give the number again. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. But if you got lower back pain, I mean, and if it's bad enough, that it's going to affect how you do your other exercising.
Sure, absolutely. Sure. Yeah, and one of the things that we see is that you have this back pain and you start changing how you move. So then your hip hurts and it becomes much harder to figure out sort of the chicken egg thing. You know, sometimes we find some underlying, for example, a leg length difference, and we don't know if it's sort of adapted from how you've changed how you move and you've created this, or if it was underlying causative. So the earlier you come in, the cleaner your exam is and the better able we are to direct you. And, you know, a lot of times what that early appointment means is we start you on some gentle core strengthening exercises, some mobility exercises for your hips. We teach you how to sleep in postures and positions that don't aggravate your back so that you don't have a fitful night's sleep or that you don't wake up with back pain that contributes to your problem. So much of it in the first visit is education.
Yeah. Well, good education and well worth it. We have Tom in Drummond with a question, not about his back, I think about something else. So let's go there. Tom, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes, and thank you for your program. I have a trigger finger, left ring finger, and it kind of is the classic, it's stiff and then it springs open. I've been receiving occupational therapy treatments. I've got two more to go. They put an electrostimulus injector on the palm of my hand, and it puts in some sort of medication. The swelling has gone down. I am splinting it for myself, and I'm wondering if splinting the back of the hand, so to keep it from bending at all, would help. The swelling is going down. The pain is much relieved, but it's still there. And
Okay, well, I think first maybe we should talk about what is trigger finger for those who aren't familiar with it.
Sure. Well, trigger finger is a condition where the flexor tendon that kind of flexes your thumb gets caught. There's a whole bunch of pulleys that kind of hold the tendon in place. And what happens is it gets caught on a pulley in your finger. And so sometimes it'll get caught in place and then you wiggle it around and it'll get uncaught. So seeing an occupational therapist for something like this or a physical therapist who specializes in hands is very appropriate. The kind of stim machine that Tom was talking about that they put in the palm of his hand is actually a stimulation that they use to drive medication, anti-inflammatory medication, right to the local spot. And so he was getting a little dose of anti-inflammatory medicine probably right where that tendon is getting snagged. So that's a very appropriate use of, that's very good management of how of his trigger finger.
So, and in terms of using the splint, you know, I would speak with the occupational therapist whom you are seeing who has examined your finger and knows the range of motion and knows your particular situation. That's the person who would be best able to tell you if the splint will help. Typically, a splint during periods of high activity will help minimize the swelling. Just like a knee splint or a wrist splint or something else, if you're very active, sometimes you'll use a splint or a support to support and offload that joint during periods of high activity.
All right.
Okay. So leaving or having a splint on overnight, which I've been trying, and honestly, it's getting better over time, but it's just I'm kind of not reaching complete, you know, ease.
Yeah. Yeah.
It, you know, it takes time. And part of it is how long it's been there, if there's any underlying pathology that perpetuates it, and your lifestyle.
Right.
If you're someone whose work and daily activities require a lot of repeated flexion and extension of your fingers, then it makes it harder to get over. So,
yeah,
there are a number of variables that contribute to the prognosis.
And it's very hard to rest your hand.
It's hard to rest your hand.
Very hard to rest your hand.
Yeah.
Tom, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And I hope things work out with that finger. Let's go to Mick in La Crosse next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about piriformis syndrome. My wife is currently being treated in physical therapy for it, and I had it for, I bet, 9 months before I finally got rid of it. And it seems to be a chronic kind of thing that comes on, especially if you're active, running and cycling and things like that. And I wondered what brings it on. And my second question is, this type of treatment she's receiving now is actually small needles being put into her butt and then electric stimulation of those needles. And that I didn't have that when I had it. And I wondered if you could explain what that is and how that helped.
Mm-hmm. And first, let's talk about what is piriformis syndrome.
The piriformis is a small muscle deep in your butt. And your sciatic nerve typically passes underneath it. So that being said, there are all kinds of anomalies about how the sciatic nerve courses around your piriformis syndrome. People who sit, so for example, on a bike seat, sit right on the piriformis in their sciatic nerve. So that repetitive cycling motion can irritate that muscle in the sciatic nerve. And you can get deep buttock pain as well as sciatic pain that is not coming from your low back but is actually coming from your piriformis. But there's a lot of differences from one individual to a next about what causes it. You know, when you it might be cycling and someone else it might be some of their anatomy, and thus there are differences in treatment. So it sounds like your wife is getting some dry needling.
Yeah, and yes, that's a newer intervention that physical therapists in the state of Wisconsin are allowed to do. I also dry needle as well. And what it is it's the use of small needles, not unlike needles that an acupuncturist would use. Mm-hmm. However, what physical therapists do is not acupuncture. Actually, what we do is we're searching in the muscle for that trigger point, that kind of knot. And then when you hit the trigger point, it actually creates a twitch response, or it makes the muscle twitch. And the theory behind this is not unlike foam rolling or anything like that. You're trying to kind of work that muscle out and try and work out that trigger point. Now, he mentioned that his wife had electrical stimulation with it, and you can do that. You put two needles in, and you just hook up a little portable electrical stimulation unit to it, and you can actually stimulate right at that level of the muscle. So it's kind of an intramuscular electrical stim. And I do that as well. It works very well. Anecdotally, I have great results with it. I needled two piriformises this morning before I came here.
Oh.
And so, but as Lori said, you got to get to why is the piriformis irritated? And there's numerous reasons why somebody's piriformis can be irritated. And the dry needling technique is just one way to kind of calm the piriformis down.
Mm-hmm.
There we go.
She reported great results out of it.
I anecdotally will tell you that I would almost say it's been a game changer for my practice.
Oh. Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks a lot, Mick, for calling. Appreciate it very much. We are talking about lots of things. We started on lower back pain, but we've gotten into the piriformis and a whole lot more with our two guests today, Jill Tine Nissenbaum and Lori Tine Brody. I'm Larry Mueller. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer today for the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Now we're talking about lower back pain and other kinds of physical therapy issues with Jill Tine Nissenbaum and Lori Tine Brody from the University of Wisconsin. Jill is an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Lori is a physical therapist, athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. And always great to have them come by, and always great to have you call in, including Lynn in Winneconne, who's up next. Hi, Lynn. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Sure.
I'm a caregiver. I have older relatives. They're a couple. And myself, I'm very active, and I watch what I eat, and I love to do stuff. They are both semi-mobile. They use walkers. They sit a lot. They watch TV a lot. And they have some pain. There's hammer toe issues, different issues. I won't go into everything, but they're semi, you know, mobile. And I would like to know, how can I help them? I do caregiving, official caregiving with them. But I want to know, I'd like to know what the prognosis is, how we can help them either progress or you know, get better somehow, or alleviate the progress of being immobile. And also, what I could do as far as helping them with exercise. They have some very basic stuff. And it's just repetitive. It's the same thing. Nothing ever changes. There doesn't seem to be a program. So I'm wondering, how can I interface with the medical community that's serving them and help them?
Right. Is there a physical therapist who's working with them now? Is there a physical therapist on their team?
On their team, I'm assuming, yes, they've had some, you know, prescribed exercises to do. But I don't see them seeing them a lot. And if so, to be just the same old thing, if I could say that with respect.
Yeah, sure. That's fine. And are they homebound?
No, they can get out. I mean, very slowly to the car and with the walker and all that. So.
Okay, all right. So, you know, the first sort of overriding issue is safety always, where people are at risk for falls and things like that. So, you know, if you could work with a physical therapist and come up with, for example, three different programs. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got sit to stand, where you're in your chair, and every time a commercial comes on, you stand up and sit back down, stand up and sit back down. And then the next commercial, you stand up and you go up and down on your toes. And then, you know, in the afternoon, you stand up and you hold onto your walker and you do some leg lifts. You do some marching in place. And then while you're sitting, when, you know, when the at halftime of the Packer game, you have some little weights or some resistive bands and you lift it overhead, you know. And every time the Packers score, you lift it up seven times if they score 7 points. You know, you
so
yeah. So, you know, that, I mean, ideally you have at least three different programs. So you have, you know, today's program A and today's program B. And so they have to stop and think. So, well, what is program B? So they have some cognitive engagement and they have some variety. And then if you build it into what they already do in their day, they come to the kitchen to do something at the counter, they hold on to the edge of the sink and they squat up and down 5 times. You know, so you build it into what they're already doing, so it's not like, God, I got to go do my exercises. Now, it can't be distinct from what they do in the rest of their day. It has to be part of what they do, so it becomes routine. It's part of their regular routine. I brush my teeth, I do 10 toe raises by the sink. You know, does that make sense?
Yes,
and changing the movement is great because it will continually challenge the patient multiple different planes and with strength and with mobility. So I think changing it is not only good for them cognitively, but it keeps them challenged physically.
Yeah, right. And if there's any way the two of them can dance, even a slow dance thing, it gets them moving sideways, gets them moving backwards, and they're holding on to each other. Mm-hmm. So you know, that's always a great activity.
That is really great advice, I think. I really like the idea of just changing it up, though. That's wonderful advice. Thank you very much, Lynn, for calling.
Great question.
Stephen in Appleton, it's your turn. Hi, Stephen.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
So I've had back pain since I'm 23 now, and I've had problems with my back since I was probably 14 or 15. Is it normal? Went to a chiropractor a couple weeks ago and found out that I apparently have narrowing of the disc and a fractured vertebrae in my lower back and one in my neck that I didn't even know about. So is there anything that they, like exercises or anything that I can do to kind of help not be in pain?
Well, let's back up. Were you in sports in high school or?
No.
Okay. Do you know how you fractured?
I'm assuming it came from the two car accidents that I've ever been in.
Okay, all right.
But I'm not sure.
Okay, so, you know, we don't know how old those fractures are. It's not all that unusual for someone in high school sports to sustain a little fracture of their pars interarticulus. Maybe you've heard of a spondylolysis. We see that in adolescent kids, football players, gymnasts, et cetera. And sometimes they don't even know that they've done that. It isn't until later when they show up and someone takes an x-ray and they see an old fracture. So we don't know the age of those fractures. But exercises, yes, there's a whole world of exercises. And the difficult part is figuring out where in the whole continuum of exercises that there are for your back and core, where to start you. So, you know, the key is we have to come up with a program that will fit with your lifestyle and your interests. So, you know, ideally we would have you see a PT to sort that out, try some different exercises with you, see where you're at. Is this one too easy? Is this one too hard? Does this one get at the right muscles, et cetera, to do that? Is that possible for you to see someone? Or is that
I could probably try that out. I mean, it's the issues with insurance.
Right, right, exactly.
But, I'm sick of going to the doctor and just getting more and more pills and muscle relaxers and everything. So.
Right, and it would be nice to get you on a program that you could manage independently. So maybe one or two physical therapy visits, a physical therapist could design a program for you and teach you how to progress it so you could do it a little bit more independently. And one of the important facets of any program for somebody with back pain is aerobic conditioning. And I think we forget about that sometimes. But those muscles and ligaments back there need blood flow. They need circulation. It will help them heal. So talking about getting you on a walking program or stationary biking or something like that will help as well.
Mm-hmm. And if you call up a clinic and tell them that you have no insurance, they may be able to work out some kind of payment plan for you. Some clinics see patients with no insurance for a flat fee. So it'd be worth making a few phone calls to see if you can find someone who will do that, and it might be more affordable than you think.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. Give it a try.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Steve, for calling. Let us know. Call back in a month or two.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Jill and Lori will be here, I'm hoping, next
month.
Yeah,
yes, yeah.
I'm hoping, and they say they will. So call back. Lynn and Ashlyn will turn to you next. Hi, Lynn. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I'm curious what Jill and Lori would suggest for keeping the low back and the abdomen strong during pregnancy.
That's an excellent, excellent question, because as Lori alluded to earlier, with pregnancy, we get more weight in front and it changes how we use our spine mechanics. It's very important to keep your core strong during pregnancy, and we want to do strengthening that kind of work, the stabilizing muscles, but not so much abdominal sit-ups. So the kind of exercises we would encourage you to do would be things where, as you get along in your pregnancy, you know you really shouldn't be lying on your back. So you can do some exercises inside lying where you kind of pull your belly button back towards you, your spine, and then you can gently move your arms and legs around. You can also get in the four-point position where you're on your hands and knees and do some kind of pelvic movement that will help keep you strong as well.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Lori's going to tell you to get in the pool.
I'm going to tell you to get in the pool. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, any gluteal strengthening, you know, squatting, things like that, those are all good exercises and good preparation for childbirth, but the pool is an excellent place to keep your core strong and to do aerobic conditioning in a limited weight bearing environment. It's a great place to be. You're immersed in a resistive medium, and so any movement you make is going to be resistive.
Fantastic suggestions. Thank you very much.
Good luck.
Okay. And good luck with that baby, Lynn. Thank you for calling. Madeline in Milwaukee. Hello.
Hi. Thank you. My questions and comments relate to the last two callers for sure. I have an ongoing saga with lower back issues that started a couple years ago. Found out I had a pretty severely ruptured L5-S1. And, you know, the thing that really helps me is the manual physical therapy. Mm-hmm. So that's one question I was going to ask you. Are all physical therapists manual therapists? Or is that like a separate discipline?
Well, that's a really good question. So in the entry-level programs, when physical therapy students go through their education, we do teach them some manual therapy that are kind of considered entry-level skills. There are physical therapists that go on and do a great deal more of manual therapy training. So I would say we all have a basic, but then there are certainly people who go on and do a lot more manual therapy.
Right. There are residencies and fellowships you can complete specifically in manual therapy. So there are people who that's the core of their practice. That's right. What they do is manual therapy.
Sure. And I think that's who I've just, luckily gotten to see. And that seems to be really helpful. I mean, I'm a pretty active person, always have been. I had to slow down dramatically when I had surgery. And oddly, my sister, about a year and a half later, is going through the same exact thing. And we started to kind of connect the dots. Maybe there were some genetic possibilities for this. But also, we both had, I had my second child by C-section a couple of years before this started really badly. She had her first child C-section just about 8 months ago. And I'm just really thinking that, you're cutting through the core muscles, and then 2 weeks later, you're back and you're picking up those heavy baby seats.
Oh, like yes.
20 pounds of baby in there. Yeah. And then you're twisting and bending, putting them in the car.
Yep.
And I cringe when you see people. Yeah. I'm just wondering what your thoughts are. I feel like it's like almost like a public.
It's a public health issue, but it's, I'm not going to get too political here, but it's a women's health issue, so it doesn't tend to get a lot of press. But you're absolutely right. They cut through the abdominal muscles, and unless you are really diligent about retraining those muscles, you lose a huge amount of support for your low back. So, the design of the car seats and getting them in and out of the back seat of a car, it's just a bad design. So to the best of your ability, if you can step in with one foot and get one foot in and get a really wide base of support, and shift your weight along with the car seat rather than standing outside and just sort of flinging the car seat and reaching
in.
Yeah, that's the ticket. So.
And I'm kind of past that stage, but my sister, I still have to buckle my little one in.
Sure.
So I do that now. I just, I'm feeling so bad for my sister. And I think that just with the C-section, I healed great and everything seemingly went great, but I just can't help shake this feeling that, there's not enough emphasis on how to build your body back up, especially after a C-section.
Yeah, we have we have physical therapists here at UW that specialize in women's health.
Okay.
So they specialize in treating women of all conditions, but specifically they work with women who are pregnant or postpartum who are having difficulties. So again, you could see somebody who specializes in women's health, and they can help you with those those issues.
Right, but her point is well taken. Yeah. It's having a cesarean section is a big deal, and then they hand you this 8-pound bundle of love and tell you to go home and take care of it. And it's definitely a challenge.
Right.
The other thing you mentioned was, your sister's going through kind of the same thing. There is somewhat of a genetic component to low back pain and things like that, because we do inherit our connective tissue from our parents. And so there is a little bit of a familial or genetic link to that. So you're not off the mark on there at all either. That's very true.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks very much for calling. I appreciate your call. Is your sister in Milwaukee as well, or is she in Madison?
No, she's actually in Washington, D.C.
Oh, Washington, D.C. Okay.
Well, we know really good PT out there. Bill Boisenault.
We do, exactly. Nice.
Except he's not doing it right now.
No, he's not practicing.
He's administrating now.
Yeah, but his wife will be there in January, and she's a women's health specialist.
She is. She's a women's health specialist.
And what's her name?
Jill.
Yeah, Jill Boisenault.
Her name is Jill Boisenault. People think that Bill and I used to get Bill and I. She used to think I was Bill's wife.
Yeah.
And I'm not. But his wife's name is also Jill.
Okay.
So, and she'll be out there, come December, January. And she is a women's health specialist. Yep. You could certainly, you could certainly email Lori or I, get our emails off, or email
Cheyenne,
and let us know. And I could hook you up with Jill B, because she probably already knows people out in the Washington, D.C. area that could help you as well.
Okay.
We could get some links going for you for your sister.
That'd be great. Thank you.
We know people.
We'll put you on hold, and Cheyenne will come and talk to you for a second. So hold on. I think I put her on hold.
Well, don't you post our email somewhere?
Yeah, we post up on our Facebook page anyway, but just in case, I think I think we've got her on hold. Let's go to Don in Warren, Illinois. Don, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it.
Hi, folks. I'm 85. I should be over the hill, but I got this bucket list I want to complete. A year and a half ago, I started losing the use of my legs. The doctor went through. We did the MRIs and all that, the cortisone shots, physical therapy, and my joints are free. They don't hurt. I get occasional lower back pain, but not much. But the problem is the muscles down the back of my legs, as soon as I load, as soon as I stand up, I get this excruciating pain down both legs. Sometimes it's worse than others. I've had massage therapist on my legs, and it's like rolling two beer bottles under a blanket. So hard.
No.
Well, am I done, or is there something we can do about those muscles?
Well,
the doctor says there's nothing we can do because it is a narrowing of the nerves coming through the bone, and it must be above where it splits because both legs are equal.
Yep. That's right. So just Lori and I were nodding as you were saying all of this, Don, and it sounds like you probably have what we call stenosis, which is a narrowing of, it can be either be the column where your spinal cord is, or it can be where your nerve roots come out. And then what happens is when you stand up, those little holes even get narrower. And so that's why you're getting this weakness and numbness and tingling down your leg. Is it better when you sit?
Yes, I had no problem sitting at all.
Yep. Yeah. Right. So that's what it sounds like. And so seeing a physical therapist that can bias you into a little bit of flexion, or Lori will tell you to get in the pool.
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. But first, let me tell you, you can do things like sitting on a recumbent bike, perhaps, to help keep your legs strong. There's another piece of equipment called a new step that you could probably do in sitting. So having someone design you an exercise program that keeps your legs strong in a sitting position will help you when you stand. Your legs will, it'll maintain the strength in your legs so that when you get up and walk around, you have enough strength to support you. And then, as she said, I'd suggest you get in a pool because you can walk, you can do all kinds of things in a pool because you don't have all the weight on it. The thing I like about it is you can do it in a standing and upright position as compared to the seated position. So we can do all kinds of things to keep your upper body, your core, and your legs strong because you don't have all the weight on your legs.
So look for a pool.
A physical therapist that can bias a program for him into flexion because he doesn't like to extend his back. That closes those holes and pinches those nerves. And it's not uncommon to have stenosis, unfortunately. Our dad had stenosis, and he you're laughing.
I know, because I can picture him.
So, and his favorite sport to play, which was perfect for him, was golf. Because it's flexion, and he sat in a cart, so he sat. But if he would walk and he would get tired, he would squat down in a catcher's position. He was a catcher in an underhand fast pitch league, and he always said, this is just my comfortable position. But in reality, what he was doing is he was flexing his spine to get more circulation or more.
So instead of bending over, he would get down in a full crotch, butt to heels.
Yep, position.
Wow. At 80. Yep. There he'd be squatting in the yard.
Yep, exactly. Taking a break. And he always said, well, you know what? This is just what's comfortable for me because I caught for all that long. And so he had that kind of flexibility, but it flexed his spine for him.
Yeah.
But he played golf, and that was a great sport for him because he's bent over to get the ball. And then towards the end, he did it in a cart because he couldn't walk that far. So he sat. Mm-hmm. So it was a great sport for him.
You know, I spent some time in Pakistan doing some work over there, and I noticed how often men would be in that position, in that squatting position, sometimes just talking to each other, but in that squatting position.
Right. Now, that's a position of comfort. And I wonder how many men in their 80s in the United States can get down into that position, because usually their knees and hips don't allow that because it's not something they do customarily. But in the Middle East and the Far East, they spend a lot of time in that position, and they have very different kneecaps from people in the United States.
There you go.
Because of that. Their kneecaps tolerate that. In the United States, they don't.
Don, thank you so much. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. And speaking of that, we have several comments on Facebook, and so let's take a couple of those. A Facebook question from Olivia. For years, my husband has had thoracic back pain with an unknown origin of cause. Gets relief from manual chiropractic manipulation, but only this is only temporary, lasting sometimes just a few hours. Interestingly, when he inhales deeply, he will occasionally feel his thoracic vertebra where it's stuck. It pops, and he gets relief. Is it possible his rib cage needs manipulation?
Well, yeah, it is possible. It's interesting. We have a couple of thoracic spine questions up there. Thoracic kyphosis, that's that sort of humpback that you see. Mm-hmm. You know, we see a lot of low back pain, but we also see thoracic pain. So the first thing when I hear somebody come in with thoracic back pain without a known cause is I want to rule out some systemic disease, because there's a couple of rheumatologic diseases like Schuermann's kyphosis and things that, or ankylosing spondylitis, that tend to start out in the thoracic spine. So, you know, if someone is having a lot of thoracic pain without any known cause, I would want to make sure that a rheumatologist has ruled out a rheumatologic cause for that. So that's the very first thing. And then following that, we tend to do a lot of self-stretching and foam rolling into extension for people with thoracic problems. We spend so much of our lives forward flexed over our, you know, our personal electronic devices, our computers, students over their desk, over our steering wheel. We're all flexed, and we're putting a lot of stress on the muscles that attach to the thoracic spine. So I think we're going to see more of that now. So what we do in physical therapy is try to move them the other direction. And so if Olivia's husband is getting this feeling of being stuck, you know, a lot of times we can get people moving the other direction with a couple tennis balls. Jill, you use something else, don't you, besides the tennis balls?
Well, we use lacrosse balls, are very, very hard. But two tennis balls tied in a sock is really nice to mobilize your thoracic spine, because right in between the two tennis balls is right where your spinous process fits, and you can roll that up and down your back, and that works really well. You know, it does sound like it's a mobility issue and that he needs to get moving a little bit more. And if you see a physical therapist, they could show you exactly how to place those two tennis balls in a sock, at what level it needs to be done, and he could actually self-mobilize that area himself. And then, as Lori said, you want to follow up with a lot of movements to open up your chest, because all those muscles get tight in the front and weak in the back. Mm-hmm. The other thing we see a lot with people with thoracic spine pain is they're so stiff there that what happens is you overuse the segments above and below. So we see people with cervical spine pain, and you basically need to rob Peter to pay Paul. Their thoracic spine is so stiff that if you can get their thoracic spine moving better, their symptoms above, either in their cervical spine or their symptoms below in their low back, actually do subside. So it is all linked. Mm-hmm.
And while we're at it, then, you also mentioned the other Eric was on Facebook, 38 years old, lifetime of pain in his spine from thoracic kyphosis. So he has pain during any activity, wonders what about pain without meds.
You have to find the source of the pain. Again, the thoracic spine is typically not a pain generator for most people. So if you're having a lot of thoracic pain, we'd want to know why. Is it postural? Is it because your thoracic spine is stiff and you're having to overuse your muscles? For the thoracic muscular pain, to me, and Jill, you jump in, this seems like a prime place for dry needling, because sometimes you get trigger points in those muscles, those postural muscles. And so the dry needling, I'm thinking,
yes,
it would work well there.
Yes, there are. That is very true. You can dry needle the muscles around there. You're going to laugh at me, okay, but a lot of the muscles in the thoracic area, you need advanced dry needling training for, because there's this very important structure called your lung that you don't want to puncture. So,
right.
So, but there are definitely physical therapists who are trained in some dry needling, and that will help kind of calm those muscles down so you can get to the root of the problem and see what's going on.
Makes
absolutely
good sense. Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guests today. from the University of Wisconsin. They're both physical therapists and darn good ones, too. And it's great to have them along today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking all kinds of issues today with aches, pains, and sprains, and also zeroing in a little on the lower back with Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum and Lori Tyne-Brody from the University of Wisconsin. Jill's an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Lori, a physical therapist, athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. So great to have them along. And again, thank you for listening. Neil in Plover has been waiting a little bit, so let's go to Neil. Thanks so much for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi. I have gone to a back specialist in 2014. He told me it was too late for therapy. I needed surgery. Didn't have insurance. I went back this year, and the same guy said it was too late for surgery. I needed therapy. So I have a background in exercise, so I'm doing my own thing. I'm just wondering if you have any information on the disc regeneration studies that are being done.
Disc regeneration studies. Well,
yeah, with stem cells and.
Well, yeah, they're not there yet. You know, politically we're having nationwide conversation about the use of stem cells, stem cells are those. I don't know. The only word I can come up with is pluripotent cells that can differentiate into a lot of different tissues, and they're looking at using those to differentiate into different kinds of connective tissues. And right. if I could pick one, I'd probably pick spine discs and articular cartilage as my first two choices if they were going to work on regenerating anything. Those are what cause us the most pain. At this point in your life, Neil, I wouldn't wait for that, and I would stick with exercise. So, you know, people ask the question, well, what can exercise do, or what can physical therapy do for a degenerative joint or a degenerative disc? Does it change the degeneration? No, it's not going to change the degeneration other than exercise, as Jill said earlier, including aerobic exercise, increases the blood flow to the area, which can help with healing. Degenerative tissues and articular cartilage get their nutrition by diffusion, by movement. So if you sit, anyone with an arthritic back or joint will tell you, if they sit, they get stiff, they go to move, and they hurt. And after they get moving, they feel a little better. That's because those tissues like to move. They need that movement for their nutrition. That will help maintain their health. Then if we work on postural muscles such as core, you hear us talk a lot about core. That's because the core can help maintain your spine in the most optimal alignment to prevent further decline. And we know that people have degenerative disc disease and degenerative joint disease for many, many years before they ever become symptomatic. So you show up with back pain, and you say, oh, my back pain started about a month ago. Well, that degenerative process didn't start a month ago. That degenerative process has been going on for years. So can you get back to where you were before? Certainly you can. And many times it's optimizing how you move, stealing, as Jill said, Peter to pay Paul, stealing motion from your hips, stealing motion from your thoracic spine to offload your lumbar spine. Well, I really went off, didn't I?
That's okay.
Sorry, Neil.
That's okay. So, but I'll rope her back in. That's my job. But as Lori said, if you strengthen the muscles around the joint, they can help take some of the load actually off the degenerative disc. Other people with degenerative joint disease prefer to be unloaded or perform activities non-weight bearing. So once again, Lori's going to tell you to get in the pool, which is a really good place to exercise because you're not constantly loading or compressing that disc that's degenerative.
I've been doing a walking program
excellent.
That I created myself, including walking backwards.
Excellent.
Great.
Excellent. Yes.
Yep.
Backwards,
and
sideways.
I've been doing,
yep.
Some upper body calisthenics to keep the shoulders
perfect.
And neck area solid. So
perfect.
I've been doing that.
And hips. And then yep. I would just incorporate some core exercises. Really,
I do.
Wonderful.
I use a body blade.
Okay.
I have
great.
The core discs. I've got all of that. So.
Excellent. Yeah, I think you were saved by your lack of insurance, because you'll probably do well with that. But that key is keeping those muscles strong. What we mm-hmm. see in people is that they no longer move well when they hurt, and they put so much stress on their spine with every movement they make, getting in and out of the car, reaching into the cupboard, things like that, where they're overloading their spine. And if their muscles are strong, their muscles can take that load.
Right, exactly.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Okay. Well, that's what I've been doing. I love your show, and I just wanted to find out more about the disc regeneration stuff that I've been reading about.
Yeah, unfortunately.
I think what you're doing is going to be the most well-suited thing for you at this point in time.
Yeah. Thanks, Neil.
Great question.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. And you can join in, too, 1-800-642-1234. Rita in Fox Point, what is on your mind?
Well, I'm 90 years old. I was a very avid golfer, and I have terrible bone-on-bone degenerative disc disease. I don't like swimming in a pool or standing in a pool, so I know that would help.
All right, I'll just be quiet then.
And I've probably shrunk in about 3.5 inches,
right.
So you know my stenosis is terrible.
Yes.
But what I want to know is, what can I do to be able to increase the amount of time I can sit? It's 2.5 hours to go to a movie, which I used to do, and I can't play golf this past year. Up until then, I was playing golf. Mm. So what can I possibly do to be able to sit longer, even when I take a cushion
right.
with me?
Those are great questions. And how long, Rita, can you sit now before you feel like you have to move or change positions?
I would say half an hour.
Okay. All right. So you're at about that 30-minute point. So, yes, going to a movie is about a two-and-a-half-hour ordeal. What I would suggest doing is sitting in the back row, if you can see okay from the back row, and then changing positions frequently. So only sit for 20 or 25 minutes, kind of undercut it so your symptoms don't come on, and then get up and stand and just do some nice weight shifting back and forth. You can hold on to the chair in front of you if balance in the dark is an issue. Just do some nice weight shifting front and back, side to side. Then go ahead and sit down again and try that and see if that would be able to get you through it. Because getting out and socializing is really important.
Absolutely.
Yes, I know.
Absolutely.
I do go out. But what can I do at home?
Well, you know, the key is at home to keep yourself as strong as you can. So, you know, that's the, you know, the squats at the sink, the toe raises,
right.
the standing leg lifts, the sidestepping, the backstepping,
right.
All those things to keep your core muscles strong. You know, and in terms of sitting time, other than optimizing the chair that you're sitting in, you know, replaying my previous conversation, those degenerative joints want to move. So, you know, if you imagine taking your finger and bending it backwards and holding it like that for 20 or 30 minutes, it's going to start to hurt. So similarly, your spine is going to hurt if you hold it in that same position in the seat for more than that amount of time. So, as Jill said, getting up and moving, I think, is going to be your number one option.
Okay.
And I think if you were still golfing last year, I hope you still have golfing friends. And what you could do is ride along with them.
I've done that.
Okay, good. You're doing that because you could ride in a cart with them and you get in and out of the cart even though you're not swinging. You're still enjoying it.
Yep. You can putt.
Yeah.
You can putt, and maybe you can even chip.
Yeah.
Yes, I can chip and put.
Yeah. All right. Fantastic.
Thanks, Rita. Thank you very much for calling. Oh, she was still doing it last year.
Good
at
for
80,
her.
89.
That's awesome. That's great. I hope that's me.
Me too.
Yeah,
Except I don't golf very well.
Well, I'm not a great golfer either, but I'm hoping I could still be doing it at 89.
Exactly, yeah.
For sure. Lou in northern Wisconsin, what about you? Hi.
Well, hey there. Enjoy this show, and I've been looking forward to talking to you all, and I'll make this quick. I'm a driver, and I have to pick up my client. But being a driver, I sit a lot while driving. And I had a problem with my L4, L5 previous injury about 2001. And just wondering about some exercises that I can do to strengthen that area, because if I bend over too long, screaming back pain. So, and I think what you said in the past with the past two callers that I think I'm doing the right thing with what I'm doing at home with the exercising. So I'll take my answers off the air, and I wish you all well. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, driving is just so difficult for people. You're in a flex position all day. You're bent over a steering wheel. So the first thing is making sure that your seat is adjusted properly. You have a back support while you're driving. And then, you know, whenever possible, getting out of the driver's seat and, you know, at least standing, climbing in and out of the van or whatever she's driving to the best of her ability. And then, you know, being on a walking program, as Neil suggested, walking sideways, walking backwards, doing squatting. And there's a large number of core strengthening exercises that you can do, you know, bridging, leg lifts, all kinds of things.
Right. And one of the things, since Lou does a lot of driving, that I would suggest is when you do kind of make sure that everything is seated appropriately in your car, you shimmy your little sits bones all the way to the back of the seat. And then I would use a little roll. You can start with a kitchen towel, get a bigger one if you need to, and roll it up behind your low back, and then sit up nice and tall. And then what you do is you take your rear view mirror and you tilt it so you can just see in your rear view mirror. So then if you start slouching, guess what? You look up in your rearview mirror, you can't see, so you have to pull yourself and sit yourself upright again. So it's a really nice way to kind of make sure you kind of stay upright while you're sitting. But yes, I agree with Lori. Get out of the car as much as you can. Walk around it. You know, walk around your car a couple times. Wait shift. If you are waiting for a client, stand and wait for them instead of sitting in the waiting room and waiting for them. That would be a really good option as well.
Very good. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Jill Tine-Nissenbaum, Lori Tine-Brody, our guest today. We'll take a quick look at the news, and then we will be back with our guest. You stay with us. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I don't think anything can ruin a fun activity more than a sore back or some other painful muscle, and that's why I'm lucky and fortunate and really happy to have Jill Tine-Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison, and Lori Tine-Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center, as our guests today to talk about all those kinds of issues with you. Every one of our lines at 800-642-1234 is full right now, and I think we've had a lot of Facebook questions as well, so let's get right to it. And Earl and Delavan up next with a question, so we'll go there. Earl, thank you for calling.
All right. Thanks, Larry. My question is this. There's a lot of sort of recent press and promotion about the concept of stand-up desks and their benefits. And then also I've been seeing these new walking desks, which are kind of like putting a desk platform on a treadmill. So I just wanted your opinion as to the validity or, you know, are these a good idea? Are they actually proving their merits?
Well, love them.
Me too. Wish I had one.
Yeah, wish I had
my
one.
Coworker
actually,
has
I
one.
Do. I you do, because well, I work on a pool deck, so I've got a rolling table. So I can stand when I want to stand, and I can sit when I want to sit. So, and then I walk around. So it's for me, it's perfect.
Right.
So there's a large body of research on the benefits of moving. So the walking is good, the standing is good, and you've probably heard the phrase, or maybe haven't, that sitting is the new smoking. So the hours and hours, well, you can Google that and you will find a large amount of information on sitting as the new smoking. People sitting for 7-8 hours at a time, it is bad. Bad in every way. So standing for a while is great. It puts you in a different position than always flexed. The walking increases the circulation. It increases your heart rate. It's wonderful. And for many people who are like me, who are a little bit like this, the movement and the pounding is actually good for your brain. So
yeah, one of my coworkers has a standing desk. It goes up and down. It's just got a little hydraulic, and I believe it was only $500 or $600, which if you compare it to three or four physical therapy visits is inexpensive. So she uses it all the time. She's up for a little bit. She's down for a little bit. She's constantly moving, which is a great thing. I have another colleague who has the treadmill desk and loves it. He's a PT. He was not an overweight individual by any token of the word, but I saw him and he had lost about 10 pounds and looked so fit and trim. And I said, John, what did you do different? He said two words, treadmill desk. And I said, seriously? Yeah. And he said, our bodies are not meant to be still. Our bodies are meant to move. I feel so much better. My gut feels better. I'm eating better. Everything is better.
I tell you, I have my best ideas when I'm running.
Yeah.
Because of that movement.
Yeah. A friend of mine, Michael Perry, who's an author, has a walking desk, and that's how he writes. And I said, how do you do that? But he loves it. Yeah. He said it took a little bit of getting used to.
It does.
But he lost weight, too.
Yeah.
And that was one of the reasons, reasons he got the desk to begin with.
Yeah, most people say they can walk about 3 or a little over 3 miles an hour. That's what I've just anecdotally heard. But no, I think they're great things. There's a physician out in California, and I can't remember, I think he's a cardiologist, but he has every single one of his meetings on an indoor track.
At the hospital, I think that's perfect.
He just walks his meetings.
I would love to have walking meetings. There's nothing to me harder than sitting in a meeting.
Yep.
Which is why I'm not a manager.
There you go. So there you go. Right. Pretty positive results there, Earl.
Fantastic. Thank
Let us know how it goes for you. Call in and give us your story.
I'd love to hear back. But I know Michael loves his walker. That's for sure. Lisa in Winona, Minnesota. Your turn. Hi, Lisa.
Hey there. My question is about my 13-year-old son, who's a soccer player, and he's played his whole life. And this season, one of the other kiddos had an arm cast, and he got whacked in the back. And so he's been diagnosed with a stress fracture.
Oh.
This is L5. And his doctor said, no nothing for 3 months, walking only.
Yep.
And that's really hard to get a 13-year-old.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, I'm hearing you talk a lot about getting circulation and blood flow.
Yep.
Do you have any advice?
Yeah, we see a number of adolescents with stress fractures in their back, and we start them on core exercises. So they'll have, maybe 6 to 8 weeks of really nothing. Sometimes they'll put them in a brace to stabilize them. And then after that time, we start them on some core exercises. So, walking, but nothing, no running. Nothing like that. No jumping. None of that loading for their back. But certainly, after 6 to 8 weeks, we usually start them on some specific strengthening exercises, so that when their time is up, that they're ready to go back to their sport. So we spend that last phase kind of preparing them for return to activity.
Right, and I'm sure it's hard to get a 13-year-old to do nothing.
Yeah.
I'll just handcuff him to my side.
Yeah. There you go.
That's what his doctor said. She said, I'll see him in January, and then we'll start him on physical therapy to get him back in shape for winter. But, all right, well, thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it. Hard pill to swallow there, but it has to be done. Jane in Janesville, hi, thank you for calling.
Well, hello, Larry, Lori, and Jill.
hello, Jane.
Hi. I've really been appreciating this program. I have stage 4 cancer around the L4, 5, and 6, bruised left rib that happened from being in the hospital too long and not moving. I eat well. I've always been in good shape with just this little touch of cancer. And I find I'm working on the Brahms Requiem with Choral Union. That's a little pitch in Janesville. And singing really helps me stand up straight and sit up straight. Mm-hmm. Now, I may pay the price later, and I will bring up bodily fluids afterwards, which is a good thing. And it's not
Thanks for sharing.
Well, really, when you cough, it's for a purpose.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm fairly new to all this, and I think I have a fairly high tolerance to pain, but I'm beginning to doubt that. And the medications that they put me on, I had just terrible allergies to them, and you know, had to wean myself off of the major ones against doctor's orders. So I've been learning a lot from you today. What can I do? Anything in particular?
Well, the you mean for the pain?
Yes.
That you're having? So,
and for, I should tell you, walking upright is very difficult. Yeah. In about a month's time, I think my body has collapsed over my ribs.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I haven't been doing the proper exercises.
Yeah. Well, the singing is good because it teaches you how to breathe correctly, and it does make you stand up straight. So we love singing. So I would say keep that up, and it's certainly good for the soul. And then in terms of strengthening, you know, given the complexity of your issue, I would suggest that you see a physical therapist who can examine you. You know, we like people to focus on standing up straight and give them exercises to extend their spine. I don't know how much height you've lost. I don't know how flexed you are. I don't know if you're able to extend and to what extent. So, you know, getting on some strengthening exercises, again, to maintain your core, your hips, getting more mobility in your hips can oftentimes unload your back. The stage 4 cancer, if it's in the bones of your spine, it will give you that deep, deep ache that no exercise in the world will resolve.
Right. Mm.
So,
well, on either side of the spine, there appears to be nerve pain radiation, and there must be something I can do about that.
Yeah. If the radiating pain is coming from stenosis and compression of those nerve roots, and there are certain positions or postures or activities a physical therapist can instruct you in to open up those areas, that certainly can help.
Yeah.
If the narrowing is due to progressive cancerous, then I don't know that any posture can change that. So again, that's why in your situation, I would really suggest that you visit with someone and have them take a look at you, find that sweet spot of the right position or posture that does not cause pain, and work from there.
And good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call, Jane. Again, good luck. And I want to turn to Janet next from Marshfield, who has a question for you, too. Let's go there. Hi, Jana. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. in September 13th, I had what ended up to be a migraine that caused hemiplegia. And all of that went away, except the tips of my three fingers on my right hand, the big fingers, are numb. So they've been numb since that event. And so they said it was carpal tunnel, so I had the carpal tunnel test done, and sure, it is positive. It's been positive for about 4 years, so that didn't excite me too much. And so they sent me to the surgeon, and she said, "What can I do to help you?" And I said, "Hopefully nothing." And she said, you know, I said, "Because I think the pain is coming more from my elbow than the carpal tunnel, because anytime I get any compression close to the elbow on either side where the bones are, if I press on them, I immediately get an electrical shock down my arm into my hand."
Yeah, great, great investigation. Yes, well done.
Very good job. And I agree. I don't think you're where your median nerve is hung up is in your carpal tunnel. It sounds like it's kind of hung up somewhere a little bit more proximal. Now, having said that, there are very specific mobilizations that a physical therapist can teach you how to do to get your nervous system to glide or move. And so your median nerve may be caught up in a wad of scar tissue or in a muscle closer to your elbow. And so a physical therapist could teach you how to kind of get that nerve to move a little bit better and see if you can get it, as I refer to it, unsnagged, and see if that doesn't help your symptoms.
Yeah.
And both of the muscles that go down to that hand are swollen.
And if I try to lift anything, they are screaming at me. I mean, even a glass of water.
Yeah. Right. And so it could be that swelling in that area is also causing some problem or compression on your median nerve. So you may benefit from some lymphedema massage or something like that from a PT as well. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
What about just a cold ice or something on your hand? Well, would that help at all?
It would probably, I would start with icing up by her elbow where the swelling is.
Okay.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yep. Yeah. There we go.
Yep.
Thank you very much for calling, Janet. Appreciate your call. We had a question from Dave. What are the exercises I can give my middle school football team to strengthen their core? Middle school.
Well, that's a great question. So I think middle schoolers are way more interested in the external muscles, the six-pack abs.
Yeah.
And that is not, those are not the muscles we're talking about. We're talking about, when we talk about strengthening the core, we're talking about a muscle that lies very deep. It's called the transversus abdominis. And so some of the cues I give the population I work with, which are 18 to 22-year-olds, is I have them lie on their back, bend their knees, put their feet flat. Then I have them take their two index fingers, or their two fingers, and put
it's all right.
Their index and their middle finger, and put it right inside their hip bone. And then the cues I give them are things like pull your belly button back towards your spine. And you should feel a muscle that runs kind of horizontal along kind of the waistband of where your pants would be contract or tighten. So the cues I like to give are pull your belly button back towards your spine, stop the flow of urine is another one. So if you think about squeezing and stopping the flow of urine, that will give you your own built-in back brace. Sometimes if you put your fingers there and you actually humming is a really good one as well. So you can have your whole football team.
Back to the singing.
Yeah. You can have your whole football team lie down and put their fingers right inside their hip bones and everyone can hum.
Hmm. So then we build off of that. Once many people, you know, are doing ab curls or this and that, and they're not actually engaging their transversus abdominis, which is the really the key to stabilizing your spine and keeping your back safe, especially in a contact sport like football. So learning to engage that muscle and having it be part of the motor program of whatever you do. So I spend a lot of time teaching my patients that some of the things we're doing are not really about strengthening first, but they're about teaching you to engage these muscles whenever you do anything, whether you're lifting a grocery bag, carrying a baby, getting in and out of your car, reaching something out of the cupboard, is that the motor program that exists in your brain should include transversus abdominis activation. So for Dave, the first step for these kids would be becoming aware that this muscle exists and making it part of their other exercises that they do. So A, teaching this as Jill described, and then having them engage that while they do their regular football strengthening drills and exercises.
Oh, very good. Thank you so much for that question. Dorothy and Hayward, what's on your mind?
Yes, I just had, September 28th, I had a complete knee replacement.
Okay.
And I seem to, they said I'm making wonderful progress.
Good.
The incision, you can hardly even see it. I had such a good doctor in Rice Lake. And it's hardly swollen at all. And and I have home health care.
Yep.
This wonderful lady comes. And so our goal is in the knee bend to be, she says, 110 degrees. I have 95, so she says that's coming along.
Yep, that's very good.
And then the other way, though, you know, the knee, bringing the knee
straight.
The other way.
Straight, yeah. straight your knee.
And I'm a little, I actually went down over the weekend because they couldn't come. And so I do a lot of the things, I try to do more things they say, and one of the big problems, I think I would progress faster if I didn't cross my legs in my sleep. I try not to do it when I'm not asleep. It's a habit. In fact, sometimes I can't fall asleep without turning on my side. But I start out, but I always go back, you know, with those
curled up with your knees
bent.
Well,
you know, sleep is important. So in terms of recovering from this and staying healthy in general, sleep is important. So the time when you're sleeping should be counterbalanced with exercises to get your knee straight again. So I would hope that your home health physical therapist is instructing you in things that you should do on your own when physical therapy isn't there. So things that you do every hour during the day, you know, whether it's a strengthening exercise or a range of motion exercise, you should have stuff that you do all day long to help progress your knee along.
Especially to kind of combat sleeping with a flexed knee all night. You may want to combat that with biasing it into more extension or more straight during the day.
During the day, exactly.
Okay. Good luck, Dorothy. Thank you very much for calling. I want to give Vicki in Antioch, Illinois, a chance to join us. Vicki, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I was wondering what's the difference between a stress fracture and a compression fracture, and what kind of physical therapy to do for a compression fracture.
Sure. Well, a stress fracture is a fracture that happens in a normal, healthy bone from too much microactivity, repetitive activity. Thank you, Lori, for filling in the brain. And a compression fracture is actually where the bone itself is in a disease state or osteopenic or osteoporotic, and then a very not a lot of movement causes trauma to it. So with the stress fracture, we start with healthy, good bone. With a compression fracture, the bone itself has pathology. So that's the kind of the difference between the two.
Yeah, so typically we see stress fractures in young athletes who are doing usually repetitive extension exercises, gymnasts, football players, sometimes soccer players who are spending a lot of time repetitively extending their spine. We see compression fractures in older folks who have osteoporosis.
Right. And so
So physical therapy is directed at the specific situation. So as we had a caller earlier who had a 13-year-old with a stress fracture, they get rested. For the older person with a compression fracture, there's some rest to it, but we know that rest will lead to further osteoporosis. So we look at a very careful balance of exercise and rest in the compression fracture, and we are very concerned about avoiding positions and postures that put that compression fracture or adjacent vertebrae at additional risk. So guess what? We put them in a pool. So
no.
A lot of times, they work well in a pool because we can keep them upright. We can unload them, but still keep them moving and strengthen them.
Thanks very much for calling. I appreciate your call. And I know we had a caller who wondered about an alternative option to walking as a solution to back pain.
Yeah, so if you're looking for a cardiovascular activity other than walking, if flexing your spine or flexion is okay, you can ride a recumbent bike or do the new step. Those are good examples. You can sit on a stationary bike, and you can sit more upright if you need to be a little bit more upright. So I think biking is a really good non-impact way to do some cardiovascular activity for people with low back pain.
Yeah, so I guess my question is, why does walking not work? And that would help direct it. So, so Jill suggested some things that are sitting. You can do standing on an elliptical. And, of course, you can always
go
swim.
In the pool.
And it doesn't mean that you have to swim, but people that I've seen with back pain who come in and we start them on a strengthening and mobility program, those that actually bridge over to swimming, actual swimming, do remarkably well because of the amount of mobility they get in their spine in all directions when you're swimming.
Yeah.
And on that note, we are out of time, and you two will be back November 16th. I have.
That
Excellent.
Sounds great.
Perfect.
Thank you so much.
Hopefully it won't be snowing yet.
Exactly.
No.
Yes.
Jill Tine-Nissenbaum and Lori Tine-Brody, our guests today. Jill in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Lori, physical therapist, athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. And they'll be back on November 16th. And I'm sorry we didn't get to it. A lot of Facebook comments. Perhaps we'll have a chance to look at those. I hope. Tomorrow at 11, the author of Cheddar, A Journey to the Heart of America's Iconic Cheese. I'm looking forward to that one. You stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.